From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Colin Allred is back and making another run to be a U.S. Senator.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the 2024 Texas U.S. Senate race, Democrat Colin Allred mounted a bid against incumbent Republican Ted Cruz, but ultimately fell short. Cruz won with about 53% of the vote to Allred's nearly 45%. Allred's campaign was among the most expensive in Texas history, with combined fundraising by both candidates exceeding $160 million. The former congressman attracted attention for breaking fundraising records within his party and emphasized outreach in urban and suburban areas as well as the Rio Grande Valley. Despite those strengths, he was unable to close the gap in many rural and conservative parts of the state. Notably, Allred outperformed the top of the Democratic ticket in Texas. He received about 5.5 percentage points more in support than Kamala Harris, the Democrats' presidential nominee. Allred is making another run for a Senate seat. He is in the Democratic primary. He's facing competition there. State Representative James Tallarico is showing that he is also a strong fundraiser, and others are expected to join the race. I asked Colin Allred why he's running again.
Well, you know, I'm proud of some of what we did in the last campaign, that we were, you know, able to outrun our presidential ticket pretty significantly. I'm a football player, so by training, and so I kind of feel like when you have a loss, then sometimes you have to learn. You can learn more from those almost than you can in any other case. And I felt really strongly that there were a lot of promises made to working people in the last election about lowering their costs, making it easier for them to get by. They were told that inflation was going to go away on day one, that the economy that they remembered pre-COVID was going to come back on day one. And I think they were lied to. And I take that personally because, you know, that's my story as well. You know, I was raised by a single mom who's a public school teacher. We lived paycheck to paycheck. I know folks are out there hoping that their elected officials are seeing them and thinking about them and knowing what they're going through, which is that right now they're working harder for less. And I think everything's upside down. If you're willing to, you know, cut corners, be a bit corrupt, then you can get ahead. But if you're working hard and playing by the rules, I think it's really hard for you. And so I want to address that, and I've been enjoying going all around our state. We're, you know, held over a dozen town halls. We'll be in the Rio Grande Valley for the next few days, doing a town hall in Brownsville as well. And this is what I wanted to do, was refocus us around working people and how we can, what we can do to help them.
So you have to win the Democratic nomination before you can get into the ring with the Republicans. Democrats are probably wondering, okay, you didn't win last time against Ted Cruz, and they want to be convinced that you're the candidate to bet on for the next general election, where you would go against either Ken Paxton or John Cornyn. So, I mean, really, let's talk about that. You said you learned things in the last statewide election. Well, what did you learn specifically? We saw that you did a lot of statewide media buys. You didn't go state county to county. You did well in some demographics, but not in others. Where were your strengths? Where can you build upon? What did you learn?
Yeah, well, I think we overperformed all around the state, actually. Every Democrat, basically around the state, and particularly in South Texas and the Valley, where there's a lot of discussion around the shift there from El Paso down to Brownsville along the border, we outperformed by 10 points. But there's only so far that, you know, some of these things can stretch, and it was a bad year. And I think we have to acknowledge that. But what I've been doing this election, which I think it was, now that I'm, you know, not in Congress and have more time to do some of these things, is we have gone, you know, all around the state, and we're doing, you know, town halls, but we're also, I'm working on work sites, in construction sites, in restaurants, I'm going to, you know, barber shops. Anywhere where I can have, you know, high school football games, anywhere where I can have, I think, more authentic conversations with folks that are not just strictly political, but where we can talk about what's going on in Texans' lives, you know, what they're seeing, how they're feeling. And I just think that fundamentally that what we are seeing coming out of Washington is not what folks wanted. I think they wanted lower costs. I think they wanted lower groceries. I think they wanted to feel like that their hard work was, they're going to be able to bring more of that home. And they've gotten the exact opposite. They've gotten cuts to their health care, to their child's public education, and their costs are going up. These tariffs are costing working families thousands of dollars more a year. It's going to be a very expensive Christmas for them. And I understand that. That's exactly my story as well. And so I want to speak to that specifically about what we can do to address it. And that's why I put out a plan for a more affordable Texas with planks that I really believe in, like helping first-time home buyers get into a home. That's personal for me. My mom rented a house for 20 years in Dallas as a public school teacher there in Dallas so I could go to a better school, a better public school. When I was in the NFL, I helped her buy that house. And so, I'm drawing these policies and what I know we can do to help working people.
So you've positioned yourself as a centrist, emphasized your bipartisan votes that you had when you were in the House. You've criticized party extremes, and you also have distanced yourself in the past against the more progressive brand of Democratic politics. Is that still
right? I'm not sure. Listen, I've always felt like I'm a Texan first. And so that will sometimes maybe put me at odds with, party orthodoxy that's, national in nature. I'm never going to be somebody who follows. I always, try and lead. I was the most bipartisan Texan in Congress, but it was a function of that I was trying to get things done. It wasn't like I was ever abandoning my values. I was a voting rights lawyer before I ever ran for Congress. And I spent my time, trying to make sure people could vote. I worked in the Obama administration on housing policy, trying to make sure people could get into a house. I think I'm not somebody who just talks about, helping people and particularly working people. I spent my career doing that. But I also felt very strongly that we need to have, politics around actually accomplishing something. And it's incredibly difficult, to make an idea into a law. But theoretical discussions don't help single-parent families like the one that I came from. It only helps when you actually make that into a law. And so that's what I've always tried to keep my focus on, is what can we actually get done? And if that means working with Republicans, I'm happy to do it. But I don't sacrifice my values. And I do think that right now, we have a big fight around, for example, keeping the government open and what's going on here, which is, I think, fundamentally about health care. And we've seen that the Republicans in Washington have taken away health care from millions of Texans. They're going to raise health care costs for particularly folks in the individual markets on the Affordable Care Act by over 20% unless we do something. And I've been calling for the folks there to fight for the health care, or fight for lowering folks' costs, and I'm glad to see that. So we have to have fights sometimes, but there are also times when you have to try to find a way to work together.
And this description that I had, it doesn't sound anything like what Ted Cruz was saying about you when you were running against him. He was running ads saying that you were pro-transgender and all these other issues. That it's interesting that when you're running against the Republican candidate, how they try to portray Democrats.
Well, I think Ted Cruz didn't have anything to say about what he'd actually done for Texans. And you'd think that after 12 years, you could run on some accomplishments, but he didn't have anything. But, I think that that's the danger of our politics in general, which is that particularly in an era where you have super PACs and all these things that can spend millions of dollars pushing incredibly false narratives, that what they're actually doing at the same time is planning to pick working people's pockets. And that's what I saw in the last election was, a lot of talk about stuff that really is not impacting people on a day-to-day basis, but doing it with the intention of that if they get the power, that they're going to cut taxes for the rich again, that they're going to cut health care for working people again, that they're going to cut food assistance for working families again, that they're going to go after public education again, and that's what they've done. So I think it's unfortunately, it's predictable, but I also think we have to respond to some of these things and make sure the folks know what we stand for and center that around policies that I think people will understand can help them. Every Texan I meet is not asking for government to do everything for them. And no one I've ever met has wanted that. What they've wanted, I think, is a shift in priorities. So if they do the right things, that if they work hard, if they play by the rules, that they'll be able to get ahead and that their kids can too. And I think that's fundamentally who we are.
Democrats seem to be looking for leaders in the party who will fight, who will draw a line in the sand and say, we're going to protect you. We're going to fight for American ideals. We're going to fight for democracy. We're going to fight for the kitchen table. How do you let them know that you are a fighter?
You know, we can talk about the party, and I think that's fine. But I think we actually have to fight, you know, for working people and for our country in a moment that of incredible danger. And I recognize exactly the moment that we're in. I know what's happening. I served in the Obama administration. I served in Congress. I also know that we are in a rigged system. And so when we're fighting, you have to know, okay, what are you going to do to fix this? And to me, I know what we have to do to unrig this system. And I think it begins with, you know, some really quite dramatic changes that we have to make to the Congress. We have to ban gerrymandering nationwide. I passed legislation out of the House that would do that, but we couldn't get it through the Senate. We can require every state to have nonpartisan independent commissions to draw their districts. We need to reform the filibuster that I think is completely broken and go back to its original use, which was a speaking filibuster that was used pretty rarely. I think we have to rein in what I consider to be an out-of-control executive. That's also a function, though, of a dysfunctional Congress. And I think the Supreme Court, to me, has to have, you know, rules around ethics, and we have to have a discussion around how we can make sure that the Supreme Court stays consistent with the views of the people, and I think also the intention of the Constitution. So I think we have to make some dramatic changes. But I think in order to do that, we have to say the reason why we want to do this is not to benefit Democrats. It's to benefit our democracy and ultimately make our democracy work better for working people. And that's the fight that I'm more than willing to have, and I think we have to have that fight.
I mean, you were there ready to fight on January 6th on the House floor as the insurgents were charging through the door.
Well, and, you know, when you're the only former NFL linebacker in the room and there's a mob at the door, everybody's wondering what you're going to do to protect them. And, you know, I've seen the end result of, you know, lies being told in public to people and expectations being set that are not true. And also an unleashing of, I think, the darker side of our politics and of our society. And, you know, I know, you know, from my own, you know, unfortunately personal life, you know, we have to have security everywhere I go because of the, you know, number of credible threats that we've received. We've seen this, you know, the rise of political violence around the country, you know, in recent months. And I do fundamentally believe, though, that we can have these fights, even the really big ones about our democracy and about what we think is broken in it, without it crossing over into being the kind of anger and actual fights that spills into political violence. But it takes leaders who will speak to our better angels, who can say we're having this disagreement, but we're still all Americans. As my former colleague and mentor John Lewis used to tell us, he would say we might have come here on different ships, but we're in the same boat now. And we have to remember that. But leadership matters in these areas. And I, you know, unfortunately, I think we've had a lot of leaders who, whenever we've had these flashpoints, they've used them as an opportunity for themselves to get more notoriety or more attention instead of trying to heal the country and bring us back together.
The government is shut down as we're having this conversation. The Democrats are unwilling to vote for the Republican budget extender, continuing resolution to keep the government funded. The Democrats want to have spending cuts reversed that were going to specifically hurt health care in the United States, particularly for the most vulnerable in the U.S. So the Democrats are saying, we're fighting for our constituents, we're fighting for Americans, low-income Americans, regardless of their party, and that seems to be the sticking point. So where do you see what's happening right now with this government shutdown is causing pain for a lot of people?
Well, I hate government shutdowns. Unfortunately, we had, I think, maybe two, I think, while I was serving. I think that they are harmful. But I also think a greater harm would have been done to just say, okay, you can have our votes and continue to ignore laws that are passed to, you know, send funds into certain areas that you can just do whatever you want with those funds. And that's what this administration has been doing. They've been taking congressionally authorized funding and using it for whatever they want to do. Or to say, we'll give you our votes and we'll allow you to just continue to strip healthcare from millions of Americans and raise it for millions more. at a time when affordability and cost is still, the biggest concern for most people. And within that, healthcare and healthcare costs are one of the biggest costs that people are facing. But this is also just about, this is the way that, Congress works when it does work, is that they need Democratic votes to keep the government open, to fund the government, to pass legislation. And if you need that, then you have to negotiate. But what I've seen for the Republican side is almost to say, well, we're not going to negotiate at all. In fact, you just have to accept whatever we do. But that's not the way that anything actually will get done. And so I see just a complete rejection of the idea that we should be able to come together and figure out some reasonable limits on what the administration is doing, as well as funding for healthcare. This is a pretty modest request, as far as I see it, that I think the Democrats are trying to accomplish. And I think it's important to have this fight around this, because what's coming is a cliff in terms of the healthcare cuts that people are going to feel very, very soon. And when it hits, especially in a state like Texas, where we already have the highest uninsured rate in the country, it's going to have devastating effects. There are some models that say that when these Medicaid cuts kick in, we may lose 15 rural hospitals. And, this is a massive effects on us here in this state. And so this is a fight worth having, to say, if you want my votes, then we have to negotiate. And I think they should hold the line.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with former Congressman Colin Allred, who is running for the Democratic nomination for Senate. We're having this federal hearing on these gerrymandered districts in Texas. President Donald Trump told Texas he wants 5 more congressional seats. Governor Abbott complied, and they did an emergency snap redraw of the districts in Texas. The map they have now that they're fighting for would give 80% of the congressional districts to the Republican Party, even though in the last presidential election, Donald Trump won about 54, maybe 55% of the vote. So there's a big disconnect between how many people actually supported the Republican Party in the last general election and how many congressional districts they want to apply. So those things, that math is not math. But what can you tell people about what is at stake with the gerrymandering that is evident, especially hurting Black and Latino communities in the state of Texas? What do people need to know about that?
Well, as I mentioned, I was a voting rights lawyer before I ran for Congress, and there's almost nothing in my field that I hate more than gerrymandering. I think it has so many incredibly negative outcomes. It suppresses the vote. It leads to cynicism about the Congress. It limits the voices of communities, almost always communities of color, like Black and brown communities. It also has broken the Congress. It's left it in a place where you have too many members who come from these gerrymandered districts, where they're only responsible to a small segment of their electorate in the primary election. And if they can keep that small segment happy, then they don't have to worry about everyone else. And so they're not really there to get anything done. They're not really there to be a part of, legislating and governing. They're there to throw rocks and to cause problems and to get attention and to make sure that they get reelected in their next gerrymandered primary. And that has broken the Congress to the point where the last Congress was one of the least productive in modern American history. But here in Texas, folks should know that every single one of the districts that was targeted was a majority-minority district. That what we're talking about here is not just power for Republicans. It's less voices for Black and brown communities here in Texas who have struggled and fought just to get the representation that we had that was already not enough. And so, you're right about the ratio being off. But it's also, historic accomplishments, that coming out of the Voting Rights Act, districts like Barbara Jordan's district in Houston, the 18th district, that then Mickey Leland had, and then Sheila Jackson Lee held, and then Sylvester Turner held until he passed away, messing with that district that in many cases, was a symbol of the accomplishments of the Voting Rights Act and of the idea that we were going to open up our democracy and have more voices be at the table. And so this is incredibly destructive to our state. I think it's going to lead to us having an even worse delegation that's less reflective of the state, that will then go to Washington and have less interest in serving all Texans. I have some hopes for the court case challenging it, and I think it's a strong case, particularly because they've been so blatant about what they're doing. And I hope that it can be overturned. But I know that the ultimate goal to me has to be, and when I'm in the Senate, I will do this, is to ban gerrymandering around this country. I don't want to see us continue down this road of state after state, you know, trying to see how much they can squeeze out through mathematical formulas and fancy computer programs, how much power they can squeeze out from their state, and how many communities they can silence. We can require every state to have nonpartisan independent commissions that draw their congressional districts. It'll make the Congress better. It'll get more accurate representation for each of our states, and it actually won't benefit either party.
You're proposing a more affordable Texas. You're really targeting your election campaign on appealing to everyday Texans who are trying to make it, and it's getting harder and harder every day. So what are your proposals for cutting everyday costs for Texans?
Well, I think that it falls into a number of buckets, you know, from groceries to health care to housing and to child care, which I think is, you know, an incredibly big cost for many working families. But what I want folks to know is that there are specific things that we can do to lower costs for people that will just give them a chance. We're not talking about, you know, giving away everything and saying everything's going to be free. We're talking about it saying that with the shift in priorities, we can make it so that you can have a child here in Texas, be able to send them to an affordable child care, you know, option for you, send them to a good public school, and then it'll be up to you and your child to see whether or not and what they can become. But right now, the situation we're in is that we're telling working families that they're going to have to work harder for less. They're probably going to have to take on a second job or do more overtime. So they're going to spend less time with their children. They're going to have less access to health care, less access to quality child care, that they'll be gouged in terms of prescription drugs, in terms of when they go to the groceries, to the grocery store, that while they'll see massive profits all around them in the stock market setting records, that they will feel like they're treading water and going under. And I just think that this is something that's not sustainable for us. And it's personal for me, as I said, because it's also the way that I grew up.
You specifically you want to repeal Trump's tariff
yes.
tax, and that you call it the largest tax hike on working families in modern history. Tariffs are supposed to be the power of Congress.
It is.
Trump has taken over that power. He's called these sham national emergencies.
That's right, emergency power.
So talk about the tariffs, why this is a problem, how this is hurting working families, and what can be done about that?
Well, it's going to cost more than $1,000 on average for working families, just these tariffs alone. And when you hear the president say, well, instead of having $3 or $4, you know, working families will just have to have one or two, I know that he doesn't know any working families, because the choice won't be to just have one or two. It'll be, well, can we have any?
And it's not dolls, it's shoes.
It's shoes, it's backpacks, it's, you know, going to the dentist. It's, you know, the basics that families are struggling with. And when you make everyday costs higher, and when you say that, you know, your back to school supplies are going to be higher, that your quinceañera you know, gifts and everything's going to be higher, then when your Christmas gifts are going to be higher, when all those things are higher, the families will still feel like they need to provide that, and they'll still reach deeper into their pockets, and they'll work even harder to try and provide it. But the stress that it will increase will be that they'll have less time with their kids, they'll be taking on more, or they'll be taking on more debt, and overall, they're falling behind. And so to me, this is all part of an overall worldview, which is that working people don't really matter. And that if we're passing on the cost to them, you know, that's fine. Instead of having targeted tariffs, where you're saying in certain areas, we know that we want to protect certain industries, and we want to try and redress some imbalances in our trade. This is just, you know, this kind of blanket stuff where sometimes it's just personal. You know, with this president, we have a tariff on Brazil, you know, based on the fact that he doesn't like that their previous president, you know, tried to attempt a coup and is being held accountable for it. We have a trade surplus with Brazil. It doesn't make any sense. But you're right to say that this is a congressional power that should be retaken. But what we've seen is in case after case, if the Congress does not assert itself, then, you know, this president will take advantage of it. And this is one of those areas where I think we have to say, You know, these tariffs are incredibly harmful to working people. We can talk about some alternatives where, through targeted tariffs, we can try and protect our industries and our economy, but this is not the way to do it.
Many families are struggling to pay their utility bills. Yeah. Electricity and water bills are increasing. Water scarcity is becoming more and more of a problem throughout the state. And also, electric bills are being driven up because of data centers, AI, cryptocurrency. These are places that are coming to Texas, and they require additional electricity and additional water to run. And those costs are being passed on to residential households. I mean, what can be done to make sure that these, when these industries show up in Texas, that they pay their own way?
Well, I think one of the provisions I most disagreed with in the big, beautiful bill, as they called it, was ending some of the support for solar and wind power, which is going to cost Texans on an average over a year about $600 more on their light bill. And folks should know that we're the number one wind state in the country. In terms of the amount of energy we produce from wind power, we're the number two solar state in the country. Yes, we're an energy state, but we have a diverse mix of energy. And so when you decide that you're just going to, through because of ideological reasons, say that this entire area of energy we're going to try and go after, then you just make life more expensive for working folks. And so, whether it's that or, I think, not having responsible policies towards some of our largest energy drawers. Listen, it's fine for folks to need to have a lot of energy for different projects, but you have to make sure that you're paying what you're taking. And if we have a grid, which we do, that has struggled in summertime in particular to keep up with demand, then we need to assess what is in the greater interest as opposed to just some of these individual, particularly special interests that oftentimes you see then funding elections. And so I think this all is part of what I consider to be a rigged system and a rigged process where, as you said, working families are the ones who bear the brunt of having leaders who aren't putting them first. And I want to fix that.
You're part of the Democratic Party's process for the nomination for the Democratic Party for the Senate. The Republicans are having their own process, and we have two candidates. One of them is the incumbent, John Cornyn. The other one is the current Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton. Do you have any preference between which one would win the Republican nomination?
Yeah, I'll let them decide that amongst themselves. I see folks who are either too weak or too corrupt to represent us. And I see a campaign that I think is quite revealing, which is that it's all about trying to show fealty to the president. From neither candidate is talking about Texans. Neither of them are talking about their ideas even for Texas. Their entire campaigns at this point is which one of them will be the biggest bootlicker. And I just find that to be deeply un-Texan. I'm running around here also in a primary talking about affordability, putting out plans for a more affordable Texas. On that side, I just see an almost slavish desire to show that you can be the biggest follower. And that's just not the Texas that I know. And regardless of party, I've always had respect for Texas leaders who were independent-minded, who put Texas first, and whatever you knew about them, you would know that they were Texans.
Former Congressman Colin Allred is running for the Democratic nomination for Senate. Others running for the nomination include State Representative James Tallarico and former astronaut Terry Virts. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. Download us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.